And welcome to another episode of the Functional Nerds. My name is Patrick Hester. I'm an author, a blogger, and an all-around functional nerd. And tonight I'm joined by John Anilio.
Hey, I'm John. I write songs about science fiction and fantasy and other nerdy things. I also do a video blog for Wired for their Geek Dad guitar. They're called Geek Dad Guitar Lessons. I'm tripping over my words because it's late at night. This week on the show, well, you know what? We'll get into that in a second, but we do want to let everyone know, please go to functionalnerds.com and check out some of the stuff we have going on over there. Make sure you subscribe to the feed there as well, not just to our iTunes feed, because you will get book reviews, and there's a booze column that Andy Romain is writing. And
he's got a new post up that if you want to set up a home bar where you can actually mix drinks and stuff. He's got this whole post talking about the different kinds of things you should get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we're having...
It's like a starter's kit.
It is. It's great. And Andy has written some great posts for us already. And we have some other people that we're going to be rolling out some posts. And we've had some great people writing reviews for us, both book reviews and music reviews. And Patrick and I are just really excited to get people to come and just contribute some real cool ideas and real cool writing. So go and check that out. And if you yourself have an idea for a column that you'd like to write for us, let us know, either through the Functional Nerd site or through Twitter or what have you. And so we're real jazzed about that. So check that out. Mm-hmm. For tonight, for our interview, we had the great pleasure of sitting down with Jason Sanford, who is a Southern gentleman and an excellent science fiction author, known mostly for his short stories, particularly in Inner Zone. And we talk about quite a few things. And he's just real smart, real humble, real nice guy to have on the show. And we hope you enjoy it. And on the line with us tonight, we have science fiction author Jason Sanford. Jason's had plenty of short stories in Inner Zone. He was kind enough to send me the issue of Inner Zone that has, I believe, three of his stories in it, as well as a nice long interview. And read a couple of the stories. Excellent reading, very challenging reading, very thought-provoking reading. And we're delighted to have Jason on the show tonight. Jason, say hi. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
I know you primarily as a short story writer, and maybe you can get into a little bit of how you got started writing science fiction, and specifically how you got into writing short fiction, because it seems like, nowadays it seems like there's a little bit of a resurgence in it, but I know it used to be the template was you write a lot of short stories, and then you build up a name, and then you get into writing novels. And nowadays it's sort of shifted, but maybe shifting a little bit differently. So tell us how you got into writing science fiction and writing short stories in particular.
Sure. I grew up in Alabama, and my grandfather was a big science fiction lover. He had a collection of science fiction novels and magazines stretching from the 30s to the 70s. And I would go over to his house, and, you know, it was almost like osmosis. I mean, I'd see those covers, I'd see the books, and I just couldn't help but pick them up. And, you know, I'm too young to read, probably, looking at these, you know, green monsters and abducting women to Mars and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, it just kind of grabbed me. So when I started reading science fiction from a very young age, I've always loved science fiction short stories, again, because I think my grandfather had so many of the classic magazines from the golden age of science fiction. So I was reading these short stories and seeing them in the original magazine. So I think that's where my love of science fiction short stories come from. Now, it doesn't mean I don't also love novels. I mean, I could just ramble on and on about my favorite science fiction novels. But short stories, those magazines really grabbed me from a very young age, and it's carried on. I should say, yes, like, I am working on novel-length fiction, but I think my first love probably will always be short fiction. It's just something about the short story form. It's such a pure form of storytelling. With a novel, you know, you, the author, you digress, you go off on tangents. You can't really do any of that with a very good short story. It's got to be very focused. It's got to be, you know, it's almost like it, I tell people it's storytelling in its purest form. And I think I just repeated myself. So that's not very pure of me, but yeah, what the hell?
Jason, I was going to say, you know, I in reading a couple of your short stories over the past week, and that's what I got from them, was that real focus and how everything really gets tied together. Because I read many more novels than I do short fiction. And anytime I read some short fiction, I'm always struck with, why am I not reading more short fiction? Because if it's done well, it's so effective. And I think I was on a podcast about a week or two ago. I'm a musician, and we were talking about science fiction, and I was talking with the host of this particular show, and I was saying how I think in terms of literary science fiction, I think in some ways I think science fiction works better in the short story form than in a novel length quite often, because I think science fiction is often so idea driven, and I think if you have that one solid idea that you're going to write about, I think it can have such greater impact in a short story form. And I was wondering what your ideas on that were.
Well, I totally agree. I mean, you know, science fiction is very, at its purest, is an idea-driven literature. And that does play out very well at the short story length. Again, novels can have a lot of ideas and everything like that, but we've all read novels that had one idea to them that would have worked. You know, you read it and you're like, wow, that would have been a great short story, but it just didn't carry the whole novel. And so, you know, the stories I write, I don't, you know, so I've heard from some readers saying, hey, why don't you expand that story into a novel? And I'm always nice, but what I really want to say is no, because what I wrote it as a short story, because that's the length that it worked. If I expanded that story to a novel, it wouldn't work. And actually, that's a pet peeve of mine, because you see authors, they'll come out with some story that comes out and wins a lot of praise or a big award. And then a year or two later, you see that story has been expanded into a novel length. And I've yet to see where someone does that and the novel version is better than the short story. And I think, again, it gets back to like what you're saying. I mean, there are certain types of stories that work at certain lengths. And for science fiction, I think, you know, it really works well as short stories. But again, that's not to say there's not great novel length science fiction stories.
Yeah. Now let's get into one of your stories that is in the issue of Inner Zone. And one of the ones I wanted to talk about was Millicent Ka Plays in Real Time. And this was a story that really spoke to me because I am a musician and there is a lot of music and musicians in this story. And the other thing that really spoke to me, and this is sort of the idea of the story and why it's so effective in a short story, is because you have this one main idea and it's sort of about economics, but instead of having economics in terms of money, it's in time. And I think especially in today's day and age, and I know for me, everything is about finding time to do what I particularly want to do. It's like what I want to get done. And I really feel like there is great currency in time. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about what was sort of the springboard for writing this particular story.
Well, with the story, I mean, I had a couple of things in mind. One is we just went through this period of economic collapse, especially with our financial markets and all of that. That played an issue. So economics was on my mind. Also had an issue of, like you were just saying, you know, everybody talks about money in our society, but what the most valuable commodity we have is our time. You know, if I want to give my time to someone and help them with something, that's much more valuable to me than if I give them some money. So if I go and volunteer with a charity, to me, that's a bigger donation than if I give them $100. Because our time is just so limited. And even if it wasn't, even if our society wasn't so hectic and fast paced, our time would still be limited. Hey, we're all here for a short time and then we die. You know, Bill Gates can have $60 billion, $100,000, whatever you want to call it, but he's going to live the same time we all get, a lifetime, no more, no less. So, you know, time to me is, I was fascinated by that. I was like, that it should be the true currency of our society. So I wanted to explore that. But also, another reason I wrote the story, and that's something with all of my short stories, is I have the certain language and of the narrative, and also have the characters swimming in my head. So it's not just the ideas I want to play with, but it's also the characters, the society, the language of the story. So it all kind of swirls together and it gets kind of spewed upon the page. And I hope I don't make too big a mess when I spew.
Well, and, you know, one of the things, you know, talking about the time thing that you mentioned is that, you know, someone had said to me once that whenever you have a task or something that you don't really want to do or that you're not that good at, you know, you have to figure out what, you know, if you take like your job and whatever you make, you know, whatever sort of money you make in your job, and you figure out what like your hourly rate is. And if you have to do something that you don't want to do, and you can pay somebody to do it for you, it's worth it because that's your time back. You know, I know for myself, I'm not great with a lot of mechanical things or even with something like painting your house. And we paid people a ton of money to come and paint like the little townhouse that we live in, just the inside. And it was very expensive. Best money I ever spent because they did it in like 3 days. They did a much better job than I did. And that was not 5 weekends of my time where I was killing myself. So I really, the time thing I think really works with everybody. And in terms of this story, I want to know where the ideas for the music came from, because obviously it's something that's very important to me as a musician and a music teacher. And I thought you wrote really very convincingly the music into it. So I wanted to know if you had any sort of background in music or if there are people in your life that are musicians and so forth.
Well, actually that's funny because my grandfather, the one I mentioned who loved science fiction, he was a professional musician down in Alabama, you know, not at the level of, you know, a world-renowned professional musician, but, you know, he made his living playing the organ and the piano in bars and nightclubs and stuff like that. So, yes, I mean, I do have a great love of music. Now, I want to say that any ability at music totally skipped me. it appears to one of my kids might have more of it than I do, but I have no ability at music, but I do have a great love of it. And other than that, I have to say this research, you know, when if I'm writing about music, if I don't know something, I just go and research the hell out of it. I will say, though, one reason Millicent Cobb plays the viola is one of my sons was playing the viola at the time I was writing that story. You know, he was trying to learn it. So that did also spilled over.
Excellent. Now, you know, I have a question about your grandfather. You said that he made a living playing piano and playing organ. What years are we talking about when he was sort of making his living? What's sort of like the prime decades? I'm sort of curious about this.
After World War II and the 1950s and 60s, he was the big band era. He loved a big band and he played, this is probably going to make some people just shriek in horror, but I remember, you know, whenever I'd go to his house, he'd be sitting there and watching TV and one of two shows would be on, Star Trek, which I learned to love Star Trek from him, or Lawrence Welk, which did not take. So I still run in horror from that show and it's still on in reruns.
Yeah, it was a different world in terms of being a musician. There are different jobs for musicians nowadays, but it used to be where if you wanted music, you had to hire musicians to play. Nowadays, a lot of it is replaced by DJs and nowadays computers and iPods and things. And like I said, now musicians can still work, but it's different. Musicians, I think it used to be more of almost like a laborer in some ways. Like, you know, there were, you know, musicians unions and you'd have jobs and you would go out and play. And, you know, it used to even be where you can play, when there were silent films, a piano player can make a living. Just they would get hired to go and play and sort of improvise a score.
Dun, 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 dun,
yeah. Oh, exactly. Yeah. And I will say one interesting story about my grandfather. He was a union in a musicians union, like you were saying. I forget which one, mm-hmm. But he was at a union party in Montgomery, Alabama. I don't know what they were doing there with my grandmother. And when someone named Hank Williams popped in and and he was there doing something. So they, you know, they got to socialize with Hank Williams a while. And then later that day, Hank Williams went on his ride up into North Alabama and wherever he ended up, and, you know, died in the back of that car. Oh, so my grandfather and grandmother were some of the last people to see Hank Williams live.
Wow.
Can I
tell two music stories real quick?
Sure.
My uncle, who is in his 70s, went to grade school with the steel guitar player for Conway Twitty. And so I, as a boy, whenever Conway Twitty would come to town, I had to go see Conway Twitty because my uncle knew the steel guitar player, and we would always go back and then we'd meet Conway Twitty. And so, of course, on a young boy in California, this had zero impact on me. I was just like, oh my God, why do I have to keep going and seeing this country stuff?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Jason, let's switch gears a little bit and let's talk a little bit about Memoria. And I found this story to be another one that really, I think, benefits from the short story form of having a particular idea. And there's, you know, sort of a concept of ghosts in this. And I'd be curious as to what your idea of the ghost in this particular story, or your thoughts on ghosts in general. I always, my wife loves all those ghost shows and everything, so I always kind of pick on her a little bit with the ghost. But I was curious because I really, it's a very, just really interesting ideas you play with in this one. So I'd like to talk a little, I'd like you to talk a little bit about that.
For sure. And I will say, now, this is a story where it's a science fiction story, but it involves dimensional travel. And one of the problems in the story is that when people try to travel from our Earth to another Earth, you know, there's infinite number of Earths out there. When they try to do that, they had to go through this barrier where every person who has ever lived, a copy of their spirit or their mind, whatever you want to call it, is in this barrier. And these ghosts jump into you. So pardon me, I've got to admit, part of that is I've always loved the famous story by Philip Jose Farmer, To Their Scattered Bodies Go. And if anybody hasn't read that novel, I highly recommend it. And in some ways, I wanted to do a story where, like his novel, where the people, the essence of who we are is being copied by something. So there's an element of that in it. And then I also wanted to, you know, play with the idea of what makes us human. You know, the memories, we have this sense of self that is driven by, to a large degree, by who we think we are and by the memories of the life we've led. And I wanted to play with that, especially with the person who is who they are is being continually replaced by these ghosts that are being shoved into them. So the narrator of the story he's not the most reliable of narrators. He's a little bit, you know, he's lost a lot about who he is, and he has a lot of other people living in him now. So, you know, all of that just swirled around. And I was like, this could be a good story. And I got to say, this is also a story which could not work at all at the novel length. You know, if I tried to write a novel like this, readers would be hunting me down to beat me with a baseball bat. But I think it works pretty well as a short story.
I agree. You know, and I was, you know, I was thinking that when I was reading it, because the first couple of paragraphs that I read, I'm like, oh, this is going to be hard to read. And it wasn't. It, like I said, because I think of the short story form, everything stays very focused. But I think you're right. If it was stretched out over to a novel length, I'm sure I probably would have gotten confused halfway through. And one of the things that I like is that some of the ghosts that go into, I guess they're called the shields in the book, not the book, in the story. They're famous people in some instances, and Andy Kaufman sort of plays a role in it. I was wondering where your inspiration to put Andy Kaufman in there comes from.
Okay, then I have to admit that. Yes, I've always been fascinated by Andy Kaufman because my fascination comes from the fact that he probably was an asshole to be
around. you know what he'd say to that? Ipita.
Exactly. So, and I was thinking, you know, how other people react to Andy Kaufman is very telling. So I want, you know, that was also in my mind. You know, I just wanted to play with that. You know, part of it, one reason you write stories is because you're having fun doing it. You know, so I'm exploring these things, but it's also just great fun to write them. So, you know, all of that just kind of swirls around. I'm like, oh, I've got to, you know, I've got to do this. So I'd been thinking a long time about a story with Andy Kaufman in it. And when this other stuff started clicking around my mind, I said, okay, this could work. And it's going to be a bear to pull it off. But I think, you know, I think I could make it work.
Great. Now, so we talked a little bit about the short story. So, and you did say that you're working on some novel length work as well. Is there any sort of specific plans? Like, do you have any, is anything sort of under contract, or can we expect a novel from you at some point in the near future?
Oh, it's nothing's under contract yet. You know, unfortunately, it's still, even though I published a lot of short stories, it's still going to be my first novel. So it's one of those things where the publishers want you to finish the damn thing before they give you a contract. Not much you can do about that, but it's a fantasy. You know, I know some people are like, wait, most of your stuff is short science fiction. So maybe I'm making a big mistake at this, but the story that's been gripping me is a fantasy. It is, I don't want to say urban fantasy, but it is set in the modern day along the Gulf Coast of, the Gulf Coast of Alabama. And it deals with some current events in our, some things like the oil spill and some other things going on, the economic collapse. But in a fun way, not as boring as I just made it sound. And it's got a character I'm just loving. So, you know, I think I'm excited about it. So I've just got to keep cranking on it. I'm hoping to finish the I've got about 35 or 40,000 words of it done right now. And I'm hoping to finish the first draft in the next 4 or 5 months and then do some rewrites and get it out there as soon as I can.
Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in central Alabama near Wetumpka. That's near Montgomery.
And I was going to say, and Patrick, you may have to edit this out later, but I was going to say, Jason, I don't know if you know Lou Anders at all, but Lou Anders is the editorial director over at Pyre. He's a good friend of the show, and Lou is in Alabama. And likes buying science fiction, likes buying fantasy novels for Pyre. So I think you should definitely send it to him. And Lou, you know, I hope I'm not speaking too much out of turn, but I'm thinking like, hey, Lou might like something like this. You know, Pyre does a lot of sort of thinking man's fantasy, and you know, maybe the Alabama connection will help out. So I definitely
think. Yeah, I actually know Lou, not personally, but we've, you know, I communicate like on Twitter and other places. That seems where I know everybody by Facebook or Twitter these days. Definitely something to keep in mind. But, you know, one of those, I want to get the novel done because, you know, it's really, I think it just, you got to go with what excites you. And, right, you know, this novel I'm working on really excites me. It's the same with the short stories. When, you know, if a short story is exciting you, it makes you so excited that you want to keep going back to it, even though, okay, that's the first draft, but I want to go back and write it again, rewrite it and rewrite it. If a story is so exciting that the author wants to keep working on it over and over and over, usually you got something there. Mm-hmm.
But yeah. You do have to come to a point where you have to decide, is it done or is it time to trunk it and move on?
Well, you know, I've actually, that's funny because I've been reading online some of the in a writer's forum, some of the authors are going, well, when do you trunk a story? And it's been a long time since I've trunked a story. If a story doesn't work that doesn't mean I don't have a lot of stories that don't work. And I've got a lot of short stories that are halfway finished, or, you know, two thirds or three quarters finished. And I stopped there, and I probably won't ever go back to them. I mean, I save them because, you know, who knows? I'll look at them in the future. But way I do my writing is I will work on a story, and if I hit a tripping point where it's not working, I'll jump into another short story and work on that and then come back to it. And if I come back to the story and some spark is still moving me on, then I'm going to keep working on it. And I'm pretty tenacious about stories. If I think there's something there, I'm going to keep working on it. I just sold a story to Interzone, and it'll probably be out either in their next issue or the issue after that. And this story I've worked on probably for, I don't know, maybe 4 years, 3 or 4 years, just one short story. And I can't tell you how many times I thought it was done, but it didn't quite work. And then I'd come back to it and I was like, okay, now I can make it work. And I'd revise it more and it still wouldn't quite work. And then you just keep going at it and at it. Now, some writers, that might drive them crazy, but that's how I love doing it, is if there's something there, I'm pretty tenacious. I'm going to keep going at it.
Yeah, I'm a songwriter and I feel the same way. If a song's not working, I just don't finish it, you know. And it's a different form. Although short stories are probably a little closer than novel length. The problem with novels is you work on it for so long, it's kind of hard to let it go, I imagine. But yeah, I've written tons of stuff where, you know, I won't get very far and I think like, nah, this isn't going to work. But if I'm almost done to finishing it, I'll finish it. And like you said, I have some things that I've had for a year, 2 years that you're just sitting on a shelf, and then I may go back and finish it or rewrite it, and then I have something I like. And I think it's kind of just, it's good to keep all your options open with it, you know.
I mean, I do have a story right now that has been rejected by a lot of places, and I've got it out again, and something tells me that I may have to trunk this story. But you know, every time I go back and because I go back before I do anything like that, I go through it and read it again and try to edit and rewrite. Every time I do, I say, okay, I love this story. You know, and now, I've got some older stories that are finished that, you know, I just like, okay, I didn't know what I was doing when I did that. So they're never going to see the light of day. But if, you know, if you go back and you're like, okay, I still love the characters, I still love this story, you know, I can't trunk my little baby here. I got to keep putting it out there.
That's great. Well, Jason, why don't we start to wrap things up a little bit? And as I said, why don't you tell people a little bit about the Inner Zone issue that has a bunch of your stories in it, where the rest of, you know, some of your recent fiction is out there, and then you can get into your website and Twitter and all that kind of stuff.
Sure. Yes. Inner Zone did a special issue on my fiction. It came out at the end of last year. It was issue 231. And I do believe it's going to be up on FictionWise soon. Inner Zone releases the electronic edition of their magazine through FictionWise at fictionwise.com. You can also find that through the Inner Zone website. Just Google Inner Zone, TTA Press. So they did three of my stories in the magazine. Overall, Inner Zone has been the major supporter of my fiction. With the story I just had accepted, I think I've had 10 stories published in Inner Zone over the last couple of years. And it's a great magazine. I'm not just saying that because they publish my fiction. I truly believe Inner Zone is the best science fiction magazine out there at the moment. They are publishing writers who I think you're going to be reading about 10, 20, 30 years from now. These are the authors they're publishing are the up-and-coming authors, the people who are doing new and challenging types of science fiction. So I love reading Inner Zone, and I highly recommend it to anyone who's loves science fiction short stories. Now, if you want to check out my fiction, you can go. I've got a website at jasonsanford.com. I've got a good bit of my fiction up there in PDF format. So if you want to read some of my fiction, go check it out there.
If you're like me, you will misspell his last name. There is no D in Sanford. Sanford.
Sanford. JasonSanford.com.
Yeah, my instinct is to put a D in there for some reason.
Most people do that. I've never quite understood why, but hey, you know, I've learned to live with it.
You know what? It could be because of Sanford and Son.
But Sanford and Son had no D either.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It was spelled same way as my last name, Sanford.
Mm. All right. And
I'm sorry. I hate to shoot that theory to dirt, but
yeah, no. I just thought that might be a thing. I don't know. Weird.
All right. So you have jasonsanford.com where you can get some of your work that way. And what other, any other websites or social media, Twitter or any of that kind of stuff that people can check you out at?
Yep, I'm on Twitter. You can find all that through my website. But I am on Twitter at twitter.com/jasonsanford, no D. And also right now, about 10 years ago, I started a literary journal called Story South, which is focused on Southern literature. Now, I no longer edit Story South. I'm a founding editor. Editor emeritus means I don't do anything, except every year I run the Million Writers Award for Best Online Fiction. We are running that right now, so I urge people, to go check it out. That's storysouth.com. Or you can find the link to the Million Writers Award through my website. And we just announced today that we have $1,000 in cash and prizes for the top three online stories of the year. You can go get all the details on my website. So we're accepting nominations from people for the from editors and readers for the best online short stories of the year through March 15th.
Oh, sounds great. Sounds good. So everyone go check all that out. And I highly recommend the issue of InterZone that Jason mentioned. The stories are great in that one. And Jason, thanks so much for coming on tonight and best of luck with everything.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
And we're back. Well, hope you enjoyed that interview. Again, go check out functionalnerds.com to check out some of our content there. This week, I have out a brand new song and a brand new EP called the Robot EP. It's up at Bandcamp. You can go to johnanilio.bandcamp.com to check it out. And it is an absolutely free download. It is a 3-song EP that you can download for absolutely free. It has my covers of Styx's Mr. Roboto as well as the Transformers theme. It also has a song called Angry Robot, which was initially commissioned by Angry Robot Books for their podcast. And it existed just as that for a long time. And I thought, I really like this. I would like to write a full song about it, but I never really got around to it. So about a month ago, I asked Matt Forbeck, who is an Angry Robot author. He has 2 books out by them, Vegas Nights and Immortals. And he and I have gotten to be pretty good friends on Twitter. Matt's also a role-playing game writer and a video game author, and he just does a ton of cool stuff. And so I asked him if he would help me write some lyrics to this, and he did. And he wrote some lyrics, some verse lyrics, and he and I went back and forth via email and wrote some pretty cool lyrics for this where it mentions both Isaac Asimov and the Singularity. So if you are a sci-fi nerd, you will like this song. So go and check that out. I'm real happy with the way it came out. And again, it's up at johnanilio.bandcamp.com, or you can get it at mysci-fisongs.blogspot.com. And you can follow me at twitter.com/johnanilio. Patrick, what do you have going on this week?
If you are an author or an aspiring author, or if you're involved in the publishing industry at all, maybe you're an editor or a slush reader or anything like that, episode 30 of the SF Signal podcast is a mega panel that we did with Alan Beats, who is the owner / founder of Borderlands Books in San Francisco, California. Kat Valenti, who is an author, a poet, and editor. Chris Roberson, who is an author and a publisher over at Monkey Brain Books, and his wife Allison Baker. And we talked about the publishing industry and the what's happening in the wake of the Borders bankruptcy and the store closings. And it's just a really, really good conversation. And if you are involved at all, if you buy books, if you love to read novels, if you're buying ebooks, if you're an author writing them, I think it's something that you need to go take a listen to, because they between Alan and Chris and Kat and Allison, they had so much good information, and it's a really good conversation, and I really encourage people to go listen to that. Other than that, Cat Bites twice a week, catbites.atfme.com. Every Friday on Functional Nerds, twitter.com/atfmb, all the usual stuff.
Cool.
I did want to say, we got some stars on our iTunes page, which is awesome. Thanks to people for going out and doing that. If anybody else wants to go out and do that, that helps us. It, builds our exposure. We also had someone write a review that was horribly, horribly kind and made John and Elio blush. That was awesome. If anybody else wants to go out there and write a review, we appreciate that. Tell a friend, tell 2 friends, tell your parents, just help us build a little bit of listenership, by helping us spread the word about this podcast.
Yeah. Very good. All right, everybody. Well, we hope you have a great week. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
On his mind, don't look him in the eye. went bad. Cause when he hooked up to the internet, what he saw there filled him with pained regret. He wanted to go on a killing spree, to rip the souls from meat bags and set them free. His eyes a Marvian circuit wouldn't let him kill just anyone he knew there was no violent thing that he could.